Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another night of Full Spectrum Radio. I am Matt. With me, as always, is Dennis. What's going on, dude?
Well, you know, same old, same old. Just another wonderful day in the neighborhood. How has your week been, my friend?
It's been decent so far. Had a nice cluster at work yesterday that ended up panning out very smooth today. So that was a good thing. Other than that, it was pretty uneventful so far, except if you count the weekend of the 4th. How was yours?
Oh, just wonderful, man. Had a great weekend. I think I won. The wife and I were playing the Great American Game. Is it fireworks or gunfire? I think I won, but you know, of course, there's really no way to distinguish. But I think I won. it's wonderful being in a redneck neighborhood because you don't know. I mean, some of these people probably had better shit than the city put on. Kind of stepped back and, you know, we put on our military helmets, you know, the old steel pot, and sat on the porch and watched fireworks. Now, it's got to have the steel pot helmet because you don't know what the hell else is up there that's coming down.
Yeah, exactly. Well, to start off, I do want to say I hope everybody had a happy and safe 4th of July. Everybody made it with all of their digits and no DUIs and hopefully no losses of life within their family or friends. I have to say my Friday was kind of debaucherous, but it was a good time. Nothing illegal. Nothing illegal, I promise. Just debaucherous.
Yeah, I was going to say, do I want to know?
It was a crazy time on the boat, let me put it that way.
Yeah, sounds a little scary.
Oh, no, it was fine. It was... It was just.
I want to know.
No, it was just one crazy thing after another. Like nothing bad or anything. Just it was stuff that you were looking because we were tied up and we had 7 boats to the right. If you're facing forward, 7 boats to the right and 5 boats to the left in the line that we were in. And it was one of those things to where you just look around and you're like, Did I actually see that? Did that just... Yeah, that just happened. I'd have to say, of experiences as a whole on the boat, it was one of the best times I've ever had in the years that we've been going out. So, it yeah, you look over and there's a guy wearing a girl's under bottoms who's dancing on the bow to whatever kind of song that they chose to play. It was it was crazy. It was like Lake Havasu on Lake Michigan, but without all the nudity and public sex going on. But just crazy, crazy stuff.
Yeah, see, things like that I find no interest in. I would have been bored silly. Yeah, not thinking so.
Yeah, you would have hated it. But here's the funny thing. There were three girls that were on the boat from Michigan. One of our friends, Phil, invited these girls. I invited one girl, and she brought her two friends. And they, not only were they crazy at first, they got to the point, and I have no, this still boggles my mind. I don't care what we're going to talk about as far as our show topic this evening with criminal investigation and all that. I think that we need to take all the resources that we've used and talk to these two women, because in everything that was going on, they said that they were so bored that they jumped in the water and swam to shore. There was no way that that anybody could have been bored. Like, music was going, drinks were going, like, they were drinking like fish. And then I started to think about it. I'm like, wait, if they jumped in the water and swam the shore, they were both walking around on the boat in bikinis. I know they didn't take their bag, which is not a garbage waterproof bag, jump in the water and swim to shore. And we never saw them for the rest of the day. Their stuff wasn't there. Like, we never saw them come back, like, when we got back. And I think that they were there the whole time, but her one friend, or the two girls' friend that came with them, said, yeah, they hopped in the water and took off. So there might still be some bikini-clad girls walking around in Chicago trying to figure out how to get back to Michigan with all their stuff still maybe stashed somewhere on the boat. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that brings up the cute little story that Graham was telling me. He's a Richmond officer, and they got a call in his sector for bodied. He said, we arrived expecting that we had shooting victims or something. It's three people drunk off their asses had passed out in this woman's garden in her backyard, and the one chick's only in a bikini with shorts. She's from Maryland, she says. He's like, have you got an ID? She's like, where would I hide it? Like I said, they're shit-based. Yeah, he gave her an option. You can either move on or, you get to go to jail as Jane Doe. Just out of nowhere, she spun around and goes, I'm Jane fucking Doe. Let's go. He's like, what the hell?
Seriously?
At that point? Yeah.
What a dumbass.
Because she was so damn drunk that the jail wouldn't take her. I had to take her to the hospital first and sit with her while she sobered up some before I could take her to the jail where they would actually accept her.
Wow.
She's like, it was the strangest damn thing. He's like, well, you can either tell me who you are or you get to go to jail as Jane Doe. He said, she just kind of turned around. I'm Jane fucking Doe. Let's go. So, yeah, she was wandering around in her bikini, too. So
what, was it the option of tell me who you are, then you're not going to get arrested? If you don't, then you're going to get arrested? Or was her fate sealed either way? He just wanted to know who she was.
No, he was going to cut them loose and just send them on their way. He figured they were staying in a hotel or something fairly nearby. There was a house party right down the street. It just apparently she decided that she'd rather go spend the night in lockup. So she did.
Wow. So what you're saying is that alcohol impairs judgment?
Maybe. And I didn't say the alcohol impaired her judgment. Maybe she was just downright a dumbass. That could be potential. But
yeah.
She was quite inebriated and apparently chose to be Jane Doe versus whoever she actually was. So yeah, it didn't work out well for her. And that's why
maybe she didn't
about having LEOs on my team. You know, we get to share wonderful stories like this.
Maybe she didn't understand the question. Stupid ass.
What
a dumbass, seriously.
You know, I've been pretty wrecked before, but I don't think I've ever been so wrecked that I was willing to just go to jail because I didn't want to tell them who I was and let them run me. You know, as far as I know, I've never had a warrant on me. I don't know if she had warrants or what. You know, once we run the fingerprints, of course, I'm sure all that shows up. But,
yeah.
So, like I said, man, it's great having LEOs on my investigative team because some of the stories are fantastic. I mean, you can't make half of this shit up. It's so damn funny. So, I don't know. I got a good chuckle out of it.
Yeah, there was a... Go ahead.
Let me ask you this. It's got me kind of puzzled. I read somewhere, and I don't know, maybe this is just a made up and incorrect number, but there were 60-plus shootings in Chicago over the weekend. Did you all repeal the excessively strict gun laws there?
No, there's still a carry conceal law. In 6 months, they have issued 60,521 permits for carry conceal. If you break that down, and that's not in the city of Chicago, that's in the state of Illinois currently.
Okay.
So if you break that down, like, it's so stupid, though, because the laws in Chicago are so strict as far as what you have to do for registration and everything that to actually carry conceal in Chicago city limits. A lot of people stopped applying for it because you basically have to give up your firstborn to get one if you have a Chicago address. Well, the area of Chicago that all the... It's amazing to me because when you look at Chicago as a whole, it's basically a 14-block neighborhood is where all this stuff happens. So, and actually the Holmes Murder Castle is right on the outskirts of where that is. But, yeah, and since it's a Chicago address, it's like, you think if you're walking down Michigan Avenue, you're going to get shot for people who aren't from this area. Well, it's not like that. It's all in the crap south side part of Chicago where this happens.
And that was,
so,
let me guess, it's also the highest drug activity area in the whole city, too.
Yeah, the whole neighborhood area is not run by law enforcement, it's run by street gangs. And in 14 blocks, when you have 6 street gangs, there's not a lot of turf for them to kind of go to their area.
Yeah, I'd imagine that you don't get a whole lot of soil, so to speak. So, you know, I can see why it would be just crazy stupid.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, it's not just, they highlight it on 4th of July weekend, but if you actually pay attention to Chicago shootings throughout the year, basically that all the time. So, I don't know how there's anybody still alive in those neighborhoods, but it is what it is. I just don't go there.
I just happened to read here, and it's ironic that I scrolled to this. A teenager shot in the head survived because, according to family members, her hair weave deflected the bullet. 18-year-old Chantel Hammontree was shot Tuesday in Chicago's East Chatham neighborhood. Her uncle tells NBC the bullet kind of went in, but it bounced out because of her thick weave. She did receive a minor wound.
All right. So,
saved by a weed.
If anybody in the south side of Chicago is listening, friend her on Facebook, find out who does her hair, and I'd be going down there and getting me a bulletproof weave.
She got her some Kevlar hair.
She got Kevlar hair. But
yeah, that's it. The East Chatham neighborhood, part of this region you're talking about?
Yes, it is. if you read down further, it also says that it was actually discharged from a 50 caliber Desert Eagle as well. It wasn't a 22.
Oh, no, you didn't. You messed up my weed.
You know, I've met some women like that, but I would not be surprised with some women that I've met that are like that.
They captioned it, unbelievable.
What are you saying?
That's NBC 12. It's my local news channel. You should
screenshot that and post it.
How do I screenshot? I'll tell you what, I'm just going to share it.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. I shared it. That's too cool.
That's awesome.
Oh, man. Now, here's something that, you know, tonight's episode is going to be based on serial killers. We're going to talk about a group of brothers here in the Richmond area that I didn't even know about, but they had a crime spree back in 79 that lasted 7 months. But I see a lot of their victims may still be alive had they had this Kevlar weave, and that's something that I want all of you serial killers and, you know, gangbangers to think about. Don't shoot them in the head, because if they got that Kevlar hair, it may not work.
Wow.
Damn funny.
That's your PSA, is supporting serial killers. not to shoot somebody in the head. Wow. I do want to, and I'm going to get to the details in just a second, or just a minute after I get out of the screen. Anybody who is in the Chicago area is going to be in the Chicago area in November. Ghost Conference 6 is going to be amazing of who's going to be there, and I'll give you the guest list once I get off of the screen. But if you go to www.afterlifeparanormal.com, you can purchase your tickets. It's $50 for 3 days. Not $50 per day. It's $50 for 3 days. Trying to get to the screen to let you know all of the people that are there, are going to be there.
I can probably get to it a tad faster.
I got it right here. So, Ghost Conference is going to be Booth Brothers, Alexandra Holzer, Jeff Belanger, Dave Schrader, Ken Gerhard, Bob Murch, Vince Wilson, Scott Grunewald, Cassidy Ray, Steve Ruff, Vince, I don't know how to say his last name.
Yeah,
I'm talking to him, I just don't know how to say his last name.
Yeah,
no, Vince. No, Vince. I know Steve Huff. I'm talking about Vince
Patisi,
I guess. Dale Kaczmarek, Scott Marcus, Amelia Cotter. Ursula is actually going to be speaking for the first time at the conference, and this is number 7. So, yeah, it's going to be a good time, like I said. November 21st through 23rd, 2014, at the historic Schertz High School. It's a 3-day ticket for $50 for 3 days. That includes everything there. There are still vendor spots available, so you can feel free to get in touch with me, and I will I'll fill you in on the info, which would be absolutely awesome. Besides that, Dennis, what do you got? I know you got something coming up.
I do. Our good friends Lyle and the rest of Twisted Paranormal Society coming up on July 18th. We get to go back to the Exchange Hotel and hang out with our dear friend Angel. And it's another public investigation from 8 to 12. Let me go pull up the actual flyer because there's another. Well, they've got me listed as a special guest. And they also have Mark Higgins from the RIP Files Paranormal TV show. And like I said, this is July 18th. It's $25 a person. The proceeds go to benefit the Exchange Hotel itself. The Exchange Hotel is a pre-Civil War location that was a hospital during the Civil War. There's actually three buildings on the property that we investigate. One is like the outside kitchen. There is the spirit of a rather cantankerous old major that is upstairs there. Another building that we investigate is called the Depot, and that's where I got scratched last time. Apparently something in there got a little pissed off when I was playing a authentic rebel yell. But, that's July 18th, Gordonsville, Virginia. It's a public tour and investigation. Like I said, Twisted Paranormal Society is the ones that actually lead the investigation and so forth. The tours are done by Angel and her volunteer staff there. Chris gives a great bit of information about the location. So it's pretty cool. Definitely make sure to join us. And as long as we're talking about all this travel and everything, going to GhostCon 7, going to the Exchange to do a tour there. If you happen to be down in the southern states and you're down around New Orleans, I guess you'd call it New Orleans.
New Orleans.
Good folks to talk to find out about New Orleans.
Going to New Orleans for the weekend, for vacation? Are you wanting to take a ghost hunting tour but tired of the same old walking tours where you don't even get to go into the location? And you're not even sure if the history is accurate? Well, call NOLA Ghost Hunting Tours. This team of guys are going to take you into a real haunted location where you're going to get to use the state-of-the-art equipment that ghost hunters use. Be the paranormal investigator. You get to work with an experienced, competent team of investigators. and have the real, true paranormal experience. Experience the dark side of New Orleans. Call NOLA Ghost Hunting Tours. They have tours Friday through Monday. Tours start at 7 and at 10 p.m. For more information, call 504-708-3567.
And here's another question that I have as far as events go. You got anywhere with the St. Albans thing?
As far as whether or not I'm going or...
Yeah.
No. I haven't heard back. I have left a quick message and so forth to... about getting me there to speak to everybody and discuss remote viewing. So we'll see. I haven't heard a response back yet, but it's in August, so we've still got time.
Yeah. I wasn't sure. That's another event that's coming up at St. Albans. So, and I know you've been there. I know you've been there not only physically, but remotely as well, and for a lot of people, if you've never listened to us before, that probably makes absolutely no sense to you whatsoever. But
that's all right. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me either, and I do it.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, that's actually
every time I thought to you, what the hell? How do I do this?
Yeah, but yeah, I've spoken with Tom Gomez, who's actually leading the event, and I'm hoping to get her to add me to the lineup there, so we'll find out. Hopefully that goes through and I can go play around once more at St. Albans Asylum.
Bastard.
But hey, it's a fantastic place, man. I'm telling you, I absolutely love it. But it's coming up August 9th, and that's over in Radford, Virginia. Place has got some pretty nasty history. I mean, it opened up in 1892 as a Lutheran boys' school, closed in 1911, and reopened again in 1916 as an institute to treat the mentally ill. One of the strange things, they claim that there was never any surgical procedures done there. You know, they were there simply to provide therapeutic aid to the mentally ill and try to help them. But they never, accordingly, you know, they said that they never did any sort of, you know, lobotomies or anything like that. Well, the irony of it is there is one room in the basement that has floor drains in it and a huge autoclave. So it's, I don't know, I can't figure out why they would have, you know, floor drains, this large autoclave, and this kind of leaves me a little stumped. But nonetheless, that's what they got. Now, if you can figure out better than me why they would have, you know, a room like that.
Well, unless they did their own autopsies and everything on site there, which, I mean, that would be a distinct possibility for what the location was. Or they didn't exactly do lobotomies or anything like that, but they would do postmortem dissection.
Well, I can't imagine that they would do their own autopsies and stuff. I mean, I don't believe that they had, you know, persons of that. I don't believe, to my understanding, that they had people that were qualified. So.
Well, back then you didn't exactly have to be qualified.
Well, true. Not to mention, you know, I mean, for that matter, also, you know, up at the exchange, they had, you know, now of course that's 150 years ago. Now, I don't know at what point in time. I don't know at what point in time the autoclave and so forth was put to use. Yeah, screw that. Hang on a minute.
I love your tag on the board, by the way.
Yeah, don't you? Yeah, I just got a message back from Dane. He misunderstood. I wasn't clear on Eastern or Central, so he was thinking Central. So we'll end up with Paul and Dane calling in at the same time. Shit.
I put on there and he shared it. 8 to 10 p.m.
Yeah.
CST.
That doesn't mean he would read it.
Yeah, most people just see the tag and share.
Yeah, I do a lot of things that, well, I repost a lot of things that I don't read, mostly from you, but that's about it.
Yeah, I figured.
Yeah, I seldom read anything that you send.
I know. Like, oh, Dennis, give me a call. Oh, Dennis, did you see this? Did you read it? Oh, I saw it. I didn't read it, though. Wow, what's it say?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I looked at it. Wasn't that good enough? But I had to actually read it? Come on, now. Let's not do that crap. But, yeah, well, you know, it happens. But,
we can actually, while we're waiting, we can dive into the subject because both you and I, we know a little bit about it.
Yeah, we'll go ahead and dive into it. So tonight's conversation is basically on serial killers. Like I mentioned earlier, the Briley brothers back in 1979, right here in the Richmond, Virginia area, they did a 7-month killing spree. One of what I think is a very strange point, all three boys collected like exotic pets, you know, tarantulas, piranhas, boa constrictors, things like that. And it's alleged that all three of them engaged in zoo sadism, which is animal torture, things like that. One thing that I did read that I thought was strange was their father, James Sr., was so unnerved by their behavior, he kept his bedroom door padlocked from the inside overnight. And he was the only person that the brothers actually feared, but he feared them to the point that he would keep a padlock on his bedroom door in the overnight hours. Linwood, who was the oldest, I believe, committed the first murder at 16. And it blows my mind. He took aim with a rifle from his bedroom window and fatally shot Fourline Christian, who was an elderly lady next door, as she passed by his window. Well, until the family noticed that something looked odd at the viewing and so forth, they noticed a bloody spot on her back, and they asked the funeral director to review the body again. And then they discovered the low-caliber weapon entry. So, just strange shit, man. And I don't know, maybe Dane has some answers for us. I've got Dane coming on live with us now. Dane Ladwig, how are you, my brother?
Hey, how you doing, buddy? All I heard was bloody shit, man, and then I'm on the air.
What's going on, Dan? How you doing?
How you doing, Matt?
Can't complain.
We're going to have plenty of those this time because you know what? Every time that we have me on the air, something happens, and we end up in getting cut off because of a bad connection. So we're going to have to see how this goes. Maybe it's some kind of karma thing. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we have a clear night. It's not raining and shitty like when you're normally on. So I think we might be good.
Right, right. Yeah, and I did get a new phone, so we're going to have to see.
Yeah, well, with any luck, we can actually stay in touch. Now, I've got an ironic point for you, Dane. Tonight,
okay.
And I told Matt this at the beginning of the show, actually before we actually went on air. And apparently I'm supposed to cover the Briley brothers. The restaurant that my wife and I stopped into for dinner this evening, as we're sitting there having dinner, I noticed this older, distinguished-looking gentleman in a suit walk in. I noticed he has a small lapel badge. Automatically, I assume he's a retired officer. Made said comment to my wife that he is a retired police officer. Well, how do you know? That's well, he's got the little lapel badge. Oh, well, as we got done eating, getting ready to walk up and pay the check, I just stepped around to his table. It turns out he owns the restaurant. I asked him what department he retired from because I've got several friends on Henrico and Richmond, Chesterfield. And he said, well, I'm, you know, 30 years with Richmond PD. I retired in 87 or 89. I don't remember which. I said, oh, wow, you were probably around when they were chasing the Briley brothers around. He goes, yeah, I actually was the fingerprints. I was in charge of the fingerprints and worked that case. I'm like, son of a bitch. So just that I've never met the man before, but lo and behold, here he is, the fingerprint officer that was on the case working that. Like, it must be meant for me to discuss this case tonight. Strange brothers. Now, I spoke with you briefly about them last night. Did you have a chance at all today to...
I looked into it a little bit. You know, that's an interesting case. You know, anytime a family is involved, I find it interesting. You know, I did that one story on the Bloody Benders and had it published, and I think anytime an entire family is convinced to be serial killers, to me, that's fascinating. How their moral compass could be so jacked up that they all buy into the same ideology to go on a killing spree that's what the Briley brothers did. They went on a killing spree. And I think that there has to be some sort of familial disconnect from what we know that the family consists of in order for them to accept killing as a way of life. You know that I've sat across from serial killers and that I've been in the seat of having to ask them questions and interview them, you know, and you know, you always wonder what makes them tick. But when you have an entire family, even more questions come into play. It's different than just one person. You got one person and it's like, well, you understand that somewhere along the line something snapped. Or there was a progression up to something snapping. But when you have a family, whether it be mother, daughter, mother, husband, father, daughter, son, or the brothers, Bradley brothers, you know, just for them to get to the point where they say, okay, this is the way that we're going to live, by killing people, and to buy into it that it's okay to kill people, there's something really messed up with their moral compass, even more so than your normal serial killer or spree killer.
Well, what I found strange was, you know, they were born into what was considered at the time to be a stable home. They had both parents in the house.
Right.
Right. You know, the older neighbors and so forth thought of them as, you know, neighbors that would help repair cars or mow lawns or things like that. And then something changed. You know, at 16, I'm leaving, Linwood was the older, committed his first murder. You know, the murder weapon was found. Linwood admitted to the crime with indifference and said, well, I heard she had heart problems. She would have died soon anyway.
Right, right. But, you know, the thing is with...
Something had to have broken in there because, you know, not long after, the younger brother, J.B. or James, at 16 also got sentenced to time in Juvie, shot at a cop during a pursuit. So
right.
Well, what the hell went wrong that they went from what the members considered to be helpful, you know, good young men to all of a sudden they go on this spree?
Right, right. But, you know, just so the listeners understand, you know, both of these men that you mentioned, Linwood and James, both met the electric chair in Virginia, you know, and although Linwood, his first victim, his first murder was in 1971, James, his first murder wasn't until 1979. However, we're not just talking about killing here. These men were diabolical. Their victims suffered unbelievable torture. I mean, just take JB or James. It's unfathomable that he could rape an 8-month-old pregnant woman. You know, and her husband and 5-year-old son were there witnessing it before he shot them. This is just not just a serial killing. This is a serial torture, which goes beyond the killing. I mean, these men were monsters.
Yeah, I mean, one of their victims was a 76-year-old woman, Mary Gowan.
Right.
And they followed her across town from her job as a babysitter, followed her into her house, raped and murdered her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't get it. You know, what went so wrong in their heads that this became okay? I don't get it. You know,
right.
The one house that they broke into, it was the Booster family. I hope I'm saying
that. Yeah. There was the one that they broke into a house, tied the couple up, robbed the house, doused every room with kerosene, and then lit it on fire, and then took off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's
sadistic. It just leaves me scratching my head.
If you look through every single one, though, they robbed everybody. Like, all their murders had to do with theft as well.
No, because one of their one of their victims was a 17-year-old kid that was just hanging around Lindwood's car, and they thought he was going to steal the car. So
right.
The three brothers dragged his ass into a backyard and dropped a cinder block on his head.
Mm-hmm.
And that one wasn't about robbery. That was just...
Well, no, that one wasn't about robbery, but that one was later in their killing career, and Dane, you know this also. When you have somebody who starts out that turns into a serial killer or repeat killer, it doesn't stay with the same motive. It just the outcome becomes the same. So they don't have, like, at that point, once you don't have a respect for human life on a moral level, you can just kill indiscriminately without actually having to do all the acts of what you, or of how you first started killing.
Right, right.
And, you know, the biggest... Go ahead.
You know, the thing is what you have to consider here is, you know, you're not looking at, let's take, for example, Richard Kuklinski, okay, the Iceman. This is a man who killed more than 100 people, some say up to 200, okay? Now, when he killed them methodically. He killed them by gun, he killed them by knife, and he killed for the sake of killing. Just for killing. He didn't maim them. Now, the Briley brothers, their thing was carnage. Fright. Terror. After all of that, after they made the individual suffer through all of that, then they gave the individual relief by killing them. It's a whole different mindset.
Yeah,
could it have something to do with their upbringing? You know, I mean, they did spend time in the youth correctional home, you know, but so have thousands of others, and they've turned out all right. You know, could it be something in their DNA? Who knows? They had a stable home.
Well, a lot of times, too, when even somebody who's not a repeat killer or to level of serial, when they've had psychological diagnosis done on these people, what comes out is that it was a rush of adrenaline, and it was almost like a two or three killer, I should say. You get the rush of adrenaline, but then you also adapt dopamine, which is a pleasure hormone that the body gives out, that you get an overwhelming sense of dopamine and a release from reality and just like, oh my God, that was amazing. So a lot of times when you start to get in the serial end of it, if it's not somebody who's actually schizophrenic or delusional or anything like that and doesn't just indiscriminately kill people just for the fun of it, a lot of times they will get to that point because that's their drug, doing these acts to people. And you'll notice, too, is a lot of times with serial killers, brutality gets worse as the killings continue, because it doesn't matter at that point. You're doing it just for the rush, and you're doing it to get more and more high off of what your body's naturally producing. Not because that they're getting more sick and twisted. They're just not, like, you walk up to somebody, you shoot them in the head, and it's like, that was amazing. Wow, that was great. You shoot three more people in the head, it's like, this is starting to get boring. So then it escalates to something else. Then it escalates to more. Then it escalates to more. MO pretty much stays the same, but the killings get more gruesome.
Well, there was an escalation to their MO. That's apparent.
Yeah.
You know, their father had stated publicly that he was the only person that these brothers had ever feared. But he feared for his life at one point, and he kept his bedroom door padlocked from the inside overnight so he could sleep because he feared that they were going to kill him. So he recognized and noticed that something wasn't right, that things were getting worse and worse. Now, mind you, at one point, up until they were actually busted for the murders, they were, when the neighbors were asked on TV if they knew what was going on, told the media that Linwood and James, the two who had been executed, they'd help them fix their cars, mow their lawns for them. I mean, in their neighborhood, they appeared to be well-functioning, very social, upstanding kids. I say kids at that time because, you know, they were in their 20s, and, you know, I'm, let's just say, a decade or two past that. But every serial killer, bar none, has that second veil that they appear one way in public or to their neighbors or to their family, and then they have that true veil, that true person of who they are, you know, and I found that to be true of almost every serial killer that I have interviewed, researched, and so on. And 90% of the time, they don't even realize that they're doing that. It's just a part of their MO.
Yeah, it just baffles the hell out of me. What went wrong? You know, what clicked or snapped or broke? And all of a sudden they would go from being decent people to these monsters.
Well, you have to go all the way back to their first attack, their first murder. You have to look at every single aspect of that, which would have been William and Virginia Boucher, March 12th, back in 1979, because that was when they actually acted as a serial killing unit.
Right.
You know, then 1971 was... 1971 was only
Linwood.
A single murder from Linwood, okay? But acting as a unit in 1979, what they did was they claimed that they had car trouble. They went up to William and Virginia Boucher's, and they actually forced their way into the house, saying that they needed to use the phone at first, but then, you know, Linwood had a gun, and he held them at bay with the gun, you know. Then he called his little brother Anthony up inside, and they started tying the couple up and robbing the house. I believe at that very point, their main incentive was only to rob the house. But then you have to consider this. They brought a can of kerosene with them. Okay, where's the remote? Why would they bring a can of kerosene? That's not something you would carry in your car.
Well, the question is,
they live on a farm.
Well, I don't believe it's known whether or not they brought the kerosene with them or if it was just in the house. But
well, they doused everything in the house, including William and Virginia. They doused everything down with the kerosene after they took all the valuables out of the house. As they're walking out, they turned and they threw a lit match in there.
Well, here's that
he did not expect Mr. Butcher to free himself and his wife and to get out of the house before the entire house got engulfed in flames. And they survived it. That's what they did not expect.
And why they didn't become, you know, like most wanted at that point, I don't understand. But they were able to carry on for, you know, another 7-8 months.
Well, all they characterized it at that time was gang robbery. They didn't even have a name. They didn't have faces to attach to or anything. You know, and yeah, I don't think they're going to put out a statewide investigation on, you know, there's a lot of home robberies that take place. They're not going to do that. Right here in Chicago, I have somebody in my family who was murdered a few months back. We know he was murdered. Everybody knows he was murdered. And clean-cut kid, you know, never bothered a soul. Give you the shirt off his back. He was very much into sports. Went with his friends down to bar downtown to watch the Hawks playoff game. He left there and basically he got jumped by three people and they bludgeoned him to death. Okay? Do you think that would create an investigation at the time? Actually, this is 3 months ago, and just today, they classified it as a homicide. They don't move quickly. They have such a backlog of work. Unless you have a large title, mayor, governor, president, you're not going to get anyone in a position of authority moving quickly to help you solve any crime of that nature. And especially if you're in an area, which they were in an area where there was gang involvement. That's just a hard fact of life.
Yeah, that's well. And Dennis and I were talking about Dennis brought up at the beginning of the show. This past weekend in Chicago, and you know as well as I do, being, you know, only 15 miles from me, the area of Chicago where all this happens, there was 60 shootings this past weekend in Chicago.
Yeah, unbelievable.
So, but it's a 14-block, you know, tri-neighborhood area where all this stuff happens. Do you think that of 60 shootings in just a weekend, how many of those do you think actually gets investigated? Pretty much none?
Well, you know, they're not going to put any real action, any footwork into it. You know, they'll do the preliminaries and that's it. You know,
yeah.
Chicago Police Department, and they're just so overwhelmed and bogged down and shorthanded with their workload. It's just it's not going to happen. Like I said, unless you're
it's disheartening, but there's nothing you can really do. I mean, and the other thing that to consider too is when you're talking about the time era of when this happened, there wasn't the computer, there wasn't the advanced forensics, there wasn't, you know, all this. So take the work of what the officers are doing and put it in their hands nowadays, it probably it would not have gone on nearly as long as it did back in the 70s and, you know, from 71 to, you know, 82?
Mm-hmm.
From the first murder from the first person to, like, that would have been found out way faster than nowadays than it did back then.
Oh, yeah.
Also, to backtrack a little bit of what of Dennis, when you were bringing up, and like what clicked in the family, what was that pop in the circuit that made them do this? Well, if you look at the timeline from 71 to 79, when it went from individual to basically gang action, the bond between people, especially in a family unit, was a little bit different. Even like, especially if all three kids were twisted when they were growing up and the father was scared in the first place. Well, once the first murder happened in 71, he probably told his brothers about it and said, "We can't tell anybody about this. This is our secret, but let me tell you how awesome it was." Then you have preteen influence of, hey, I got away with it, and it was the best feeling in the world. Kind of like, you know, where people start like, oh, no, just, you know, take a hit of this joint. It usually doesn't happen for the first time in a rational adult person. But with the family influence and the family unit, okay, this is we're blood brothers, this is our secret, you know, this doesn't leave our clubhouse, whatever the hell the situation may be. Well, now that seed has been planted of, hey, this happened, this was the best thing ever, and I got away with it, I can pretty much guarantee you that in the B&E that happened, the person who doused the two people in kerosene, the other ones were fine. Like, yeah, let's set the house on fire or whatever. Well, all three of them, except for, or two out of the three, I should say, let me rephrase that, two out of the three had such a higher adrenaline rush going that the one who tied them up was probably the one that committed the first murder. He was probably also the one that actually doused the people with kerosene, while the other two brothers didn't know what the hell was going on. They're like, all right, yeah, okay, we got the loot. Let's get the hell out of here. Let's get out of here. And throwing the match, not knowing that the family, because he didn't care about killing at that point. So it's a progression of influence. So influence without the current morals. I'm sure with them having exotic pets, what they have to do, it's not like feeding your dog or feeding your cat. If they have snakes, they have lizards, they have whatever, you're feeding something else live prey, so they're watching death happen or fascinated by it.
Mm-hmm.
So, with influence and lack of human, or of respect for life, it makes it a little bit easier to trip that circuit and just not care of it on a human level because they heard how awesome it was. And that's just a hypothetical. I don't know because nobody's talked to these people.
Right.
But from what I've seen in the past and people that I've talked to and people who have killed people, and a couple people, not just, you know, one person, that is something is after the first one, when you pop your proverbial cherry, it gets easier.
Mm-hmm. And they have more of a lust for it, too.
Yeah. Especially if you're getting away with it.
You know.
Mm-hmm. But, mm-hmm. you know, and another thing, like, and Dennis and I had a long conversation about this, actually, last night. When you start to get into, like, Dr. Kevorkian, who had the one, and what I was saying to Dennis is, like, what screamed out to me, and a lot of serial killers have this, is a God complex. And that's what I think came into Kevorkian. He was, at the time, under current law, he was not breaking the rules, but he was killing people, but he thought he was doing them a favor because it was sick and ill people who had a minimal time frame, but it was almost in the mindset of putting a dog to sleep that was sick. So a lot of times, I mean, it's completely situational and completely subjective when it comes to this topic of mental capacity of the person who's committing these acts.
Mm-hmm.
But, mm-hmm. yeah, Dane, I think you've done a little bit of research on this topic.
mm-hmm.
Or subject, I should say. But, I mean, you know, from what you've looked at and who you've talked to and what I've looked at over my past and who I've talked to, is what I found any different than what you found?
No. But, you know, you have to consider also, you know, there's so much that comes into play. And what I have noticed is the events that are going on, You have to consider what's going on in society and in culture at the time, too. Okay? When you look at what was going on in the 70s with respects to the Briley brothers, okay? This was a very monumental time in history when things were changing, okay? There was a big riot at a rock concert, and this was at the Virginia Commonwealth University at the time. And that mixed with other events such as the entire Black Panther movement in the 70s, where they were, meaning the African-American culture, were basically hanging on to the power to the people. The idea with the Black Panthers were to take what is ours and do not give it up, okay? Now, I'm not saying that the Brileys were involved with that, but that was the mentality back then, okay? And Richmond, Virginia was a very pivotal area for politics, a very pivotal area for the peace-love movement and the history that goes along with it. And then you have this gang of serial, this family gang of serial killers who happen to be African American, who happen to be militant, that go to great lengths to stump the police, because they did for quite a long time. And they even went as far, and I don't know if you covered this or not, but they even went as far as both James and Lynn were breaking out of prison when they were on death row. How many, like we were talking last night, Dennis and I were talking, how many people have actually broke out of prison while on death row?
Not just prison, but death row.
Exactly.
And you know, the death row guards can thank a couple of the other inmates for their lives. And they say that, you know, you're on death row, you have, your moral compass is obviously screwed up, but these are death row inmates that protected the guards and prevented these two from killing them. And there was a nurse that was bringing meds in for others that, you know, they wouldn't let the brothers, they were going to rape her as well, which I'm certain that would have ended up with her being killed too. But the other
they actually took her as hostage.
Right.
She was going to deliver medication, and they took her as hostage, and they were going to rape her. And that's when the, what's his name? Wilbert Evans. He was incarcerated for killing a cop, and he stopped the Linwood brothers. Actually, Linwood Briley, he stopped him from taking her and raping the nurse. So these guys were they had to be very, very scary to even the inmates in order to get away with stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, not to get off the subject, but to get off the subject, but just take, for example, you know, H.H. Holmes. You know, I wrote the book on him.
Yeah.
Okay. This guy killed, for sake of argument, most people believe that he killed 200 people or more. Now, the legend has it that he could get whatever he wanted. He had this power to be able to control people just because he was so charismatic and persuasive. And when it came to the women, he could just about do whatever he wanted. They just fell at his feet. And it was before he killed them. But for some reason, there are those people like Holmes and the Bradley brothers who reach some level of I can't call it maturity or education, or it's just a level in their psyche to where they are they attract what seems to be everything that works in their favor. They can get what they want, anything they want, at any cost. They can get whatever they want to work for them. the Briley brothers breaking out of death row. That is, to me, one of the hardest things you can do.
Well, the part that leaves me a little baffled about their breakout and everything was the fact that the other inmates were able to prevent them from killing the guards and so forth when they had done everything else so dastardly up to this point. How all of a sudden did somebody else influence their thinking to make them stop? And not just somebody, but this was a cop killer. Now, is it that they were intimidated?
Or was
by
it
him?
A ploy? Or was it a ploy? You have to question every single angle. Was it a ploy?
Well, that's possible. You know, one thing I think would actually be kind of cool, and Dana, I know you're busy, but Dennis, I do want to kind of look into this too. In the time, I think coming up soon that we should have a follow-up show, and Dennis, if you can get the gentleman who you met this evening, who actually worked the case on the fingerprint and was part of it, would be to get him on, do the research, but also see if we can tie anything mentally as far as serial killer goes, as far as with pattern between like Holmes, bring up people a time like David Berkowitz, you know, any of those, and even go into the 80s when you had what the hell's his name, Jeffrey Dahmer, 80s and 90s, to tie that mentality and see if there's any correlation that we can narrow down to say, all right, this seems to be an MO of pattern of behavior. And then actually see if we can mentally get an idea of how a serial killer's brain works without actually talking to one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Having somebody involved.
Yeah, you know, I will see about getting the retired officer that I spoke with tonight that was the, he actually just did the fingerprint portion of the case. Also, I have a family member that's very good friends with the detective that was actually working the homicide at that time. I may be able to get him to join us, but we'll have to see, and we'll definitely see about getting another show going on this same exact topic. Dana, I definitely want to thank you for your time, but we've got, I apologize, and this is my complete fault for not verifying Eastern versus Central time.
That's no problem.
Completely my screw up, but I've got Paul is actually joining us as well tonight, and he may even have some input into this. I know he's pretty good friends with an individual that is notorious for murders. Paul, do you have your friend here with us tonight? By the way, welcome aboard, Paul.
He's back.
What's going on, fellas?
What's up, Paul? How you doing?
How you doing, Matt? We doing all right?
Yeah, doing all right. Can't complain. How you been? I haven't talked to you in a while.
It's been a while. I happened to be in Virginia and met up with my buddy, which, of course, we went out on a little excursion, which we had a good time. He was a little ticked off that they changed the key locks on the building, but that didn't matter. We still made the best of it, and I definitely want to listen to some of those EVPs we got because it was pretty intense, especially the case where we heard the name Molly being shouted out, and we looked down and the headstone said Molly. So it was pretty interesting night, and everybody had a blast, and we can't wait till we do it again and spend the whole time doing it. But anyway.
Yeah. It was definitely interesting, and even the ride home wasn't boring.
Oh, never the right. It's never dull. Don't, you know, it's kind of like whatever happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. I'm just going to say that about Virginia, too, because it was a very freaking interesting night. I couldn't even I seen EVPs. I seen a stranded vehicle, a hit and run, all in one night. And plus, I was drinking later, so it was kind of like a good night. Kind of like me scaring two girls running out of the building, one peeing and one passing out. I mean, that's, you know, the way it rolls.
Yeah, which, you know, that night you should have been, like, party fouled for making that girl drop her beer. Not once, but twice.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. You know me. I'm like a rogue shark, as when I see them, it's in for the kill. Shoot, I even scared Matt, but that didn't take much. But, sorry, Matt.
No. No, no. Not too much at all.
But, you know, I appreciate you guys having me on the show tonight. I mean, a lot of stuff has happened since that time. I mean, geez, it's been a while since we saw each other at Parafest, and you asked me on the show intermittently, and we had a good time then. A lot is going on. I'm listening to the gentleman you had on prior. I mean, as far as, you know, killers, and, I just was finished up one of my first movies breaking out as far as being a regular actor. It's a movie called Faces, which is a film by Thomas Ryan, which he gave me. I was pretty excited. He gave me one of the second largest parts of the film. And this film's going to be hopefully finished by the film's done, but as far as the editing and everything by the end of July. And then we're hoping to, put this out there. And of course I'm going to have, if you guys let me, Tom Ryan would love to come on your show and, you know, give a little insight of what's going on, because it's a really, I was very, very happy as far as being in my first movie. First movie as far as acting, I mean, I was in Rob Dimension's Baggage, which was an excellent film, but I was only somebody who helped out the crew. I learned a lot about the film. That was directed by Jeremiah Kipp and written by Rob Dimension. It was an awesome film. And, I was just there as an extra. And then to get actually be behind the camera and doing, you know, what I like to do. I mean, normally in the cases I'm a character actor, but to be me and then, you know, kind of like transcend into this character, which I'm not going to give you too much details on, but it's a lot about friends. It's a lot about friendship and how friendship can take control over your emotions and what can transpire. But it's a really, really good film. It's, like I said, it's a movie called Faces, and it should be coming out hopefully everything goes right. And Tom Ryan, if you're here and listen to me, hopefully everything goes right. It'll be done by the end of July as far as ready to be out. And then, of course, when the premiere comes on, I'll let everybody know. But what else other is coming? Not that this show is all about me, because it's not. One of my hugest characters, and all I'm going to say is one of my characters that everybody loves is had to go away for a little while. I have a kind of like a non-disclosure right now as far as giving too much detail, but hopefully you'll see the puppet or doll or however anybody wants to see the Isaac soon enough. A lot of stuff is going forward, which of course when Isaac does come back, hopefully it's going to be one of my most epic things that I've ever done in my starting of my horror career, and I'm really excited about it. And sorry to say, you know, I love to bring Isaac out, but I can't. But, little shout-out to my close friend, Elsie. She's recuperating. Of course, she's a wonderful woman, and she's basically, I consider her my manager and agent for Isaac. And she's a battler. She's been battling, a little bit of cancer, but everything's going good. And, my heart goes out to you and your husband, Elsie, which is Adams Ginsberg. And we're going to knock the cover off the ball with this one, and I guarantee it, guys, when you see the puppet come back, it's going to blow your minds. That's all I'm going to tell you. So, in the meantime, I'm still doing Joker. Absolutely. I absolutely like to do the Joker. And I'm also doing a newer character called Siphon. Siphon is a little Romanian. He's kind of a freak. He sucks brains. You know me, Matt. Again, Dennis, I go right to the point of taking it to the extreme. you know. But Siphon is a cool character. Siphon kind of debuted more at Bizarre AC. Originally, my original character, which was the doll, was going to come, but since everything happened with Isaac, I had to change gears. But as I changed gears, I told them this was a really good fit, and Siphon did very well as the, you know, the Joker always did very, very well. But, you know, hopefully be seeing more and more characters as time progresses. But I'm keying in, and I'm trying to master my craft to the best as I possibly can. I met a lot of wonderful people. When I went to TerrorCon in Rhode Island, which Rhode Island is a very unique town. I will tell you guys, when we first went to Rhode Island, I really thought I was in the episode of, no disrespect to all the Rhode Island people, I thought I was in the episode of Walking Dead, because when we, even though there was a convention going on, there was nobody like in the streets at all. And I said, for a big town, there was like, it was a little eerie. But when we got in there, of course, people started coming. I met some really wonderful people out there. One in particular is a woman by the name of Diane Pimentel, who, let me tell you guys are going to hear a lot from this girl. Her husband, Jeff, and Diane are listening right now. This girl is an amazing special effects makeup artist. When I saw her work, I was dumbfounded. She's new. She's going to be doing, and I forget the name of the movie, but she's going to be starting her first movie in July 19th. And I wish you all the best, Diane, because you are going to knock the cover off the ball. So, and, of course, meeting all the characters. I mean, I'm still friends with Lou Temple and Irone Singleton, all the guys from Walking Dead. I made Liam Vamp, who's one of the huge cosplayers. One thing I can honestly say, within the horror industry, everybody likes to network. Everybody believes in what they do and believes in their characters, and as I do. I mean, I've always told you guys, go big or go home, and I will not up until I get to where I want to get to. Where is that? I probably won't know until I actually get there. But it's coming. It's coming soon. So.
Well, and that's one thing I've always applauded you on is the amount of just research and video that you watch to make sure that you get mannerisms down, to make sure that you get, like, everything spot on to the T. And you don't just pull a character out of your ass and say, oh, yeah, I think I'm going to do this, and no, it's not that good. There's a lot of research and development that goes into what you do, and that's absolutely amazing.
Well, I absolutely appreciate that. I mean, you know, when these people come to these conventions, you know, it's that believable factor. And I have friends that do great characters, and I love them. But with me, when I'm that character, I'm that character. And people who know me, once that the prosthetic or everything passes my lips, I'll be that character for 8 hours, 12 hours, so long it takes. And, of course, when I come out of that character, as far as when I learn method acting, then I gradually drain myself. I mean, it's funny. When I'm done at convention or done at the end of the late night, I use, it's maybe weird, yeah, I'll have a couple drinks, but what I use to bring me down is I like to dance. Yes, I'm this Guido type. I'm Italian and Slovak, and I've always learned how to dance, and I used to go to clubs and stuff, but dancing kind of brings me down to the kilt, to where I need, to that plateau to get ready for the next day. But if it's not believable, I know I'm not doing my job, and that's, I think, the first time that stuck out in Dennis and your mind, Matt, was when you first met me. And and if I can impact, when I can impact, and me and Dennis, I'll let you, Dennis, speak and tell a story. When we met, it was like, you know what, dude, you're going to believe that Freddy Krueger's here, or you're going to go home. And I think I made it believable for him, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, there's popping around the corner at high speed and running face-to-face with Freddy. You don't soon forget that shit.
Welcome to my prime time, bitch.
or even standing out. No, Dennis, I wasn't there when you popped around the corner and saw Paul for the first time as Freddy. But I will tell you, when we were standing out on the patio and you knew who he was because you had talked to him. And I didn't
introduce you.
And you're like, oh yeah, let me introduce you to my friend Paul. He's like, hey man, how's it going? Yeah, nice to meet you. And then sat around for a couple minutes, and then it was just, and then Freddie popped out. And I was like, holy shit, dude, that's you. You're all prim and proper dressed.
The same thing happened to my friend Diane when I met her there. She's creeped out about Freddie, and the thing with me, as you guys know, I'll learn their name from one character and go into the other. So that's the kind of good part, because I remember names, is that it's one thing to come out, I'll come in a siphon, learn your name. It's another thing when Freddie comes around a corner and says, hi, Diane. I mean, I had him freaking out, and then later, because I know the people I scare, and Diane, not to embarrass you, I know I did scare her at first or got her a little uneasy. When I take my mask off, I know where the people to go back to. And they usually don't kick me in the groin. They usually turn around and give me a hug because they don't want to go home with this, and it sits with them. And that's the biggest thing. Those couple girls that you guys saw, the two that ran out, the two that kind of passed out, and the one that peed, they basically didn't want nothing to do with me until later. You know, I'm usually uglier when the mask comes off, but that's beside the point. But they really were, you know, dumbfounded. And that's the thing. When I'm in my character, like even Matt will tell you, you don't know me. And then when you think you know me, you still don't know me. And then when the character comes out and I'm done, I can sit right next to you and you will have no idea. It's like Bruce Wayne and Batman, if you want to think of it like that.
That's a complete accurate description right there. It is Bruce Wayne and Batman.
Well, and not to mention, you know, we opened this show talking about serial killers and shit. And, you know, and it plays right into that. You know, it kind of scares me that I was virtually alone with you in a cemetery. I mean, there were two other people there, but knowing how fast you can swap character, man, I'm kind of glad I came out of that son of a bitch alive at this point.
Yeah, but it was good. It was great being there, because that's the biggest thing. I have a very high scare tolerance. My friend Adam Ginsberg, the same thing too. Michael Stever, who was also with us. I mean, he's a videographer and he's you know, directs films and stuff like that. I just recently, I don't know if you guys saw it posted. It was like an exclusive. Mike Stever was doing stuff from Terracon. Oh no, Scares at Cares we were at. And Scares It Cares, of course, you know, they donate a lot of the proceeds to good causes and things. And Heather Langenkamp, which is also known as Heather Anderson now, which played Nancy in Nightmare on Elm Street, of course, one of my favorite movies, go figure. But they did an exclusive that she gave, basically cut off locks of her hair and put them in bags, but they gave me an exclusive that I have a video as well as photographs of Freddie cutting her hair, which was pretty cool. So that's all. Just look for it on either my page or I'll make sure I share it again, or you can look on Michael Stever's page and he's sharing it, but it's for Scares It Cares. And it may even be on Heather's page too, but it's really good calls and it was a lot of fun. But getting back to what I said, when we were in the place that we were doing the EVPs, I love that because it gave me a chill of the point of, yes, I want to go a little bit more extreme. You know how I am, Dennis, and Matt, you probably can picture how I am too, because we didn't get to the place where we wanted to get to, but we were in a place that there was some activity. And I know that Dennis, like I said, when you get time, there was that EVP that we didn't make out really yet, but I know they talked to me. You know, the first one talked to Adam and said Molly, and you could hear that gentleman as clear as day. When we looked down and, like I said, saw the headstone that says Molly, that was cool. Now the other one, I said, who are you? And I said, you know, are you a girl, you know, female or male, and who are you? And they said it, and that was on there. And I know, Dennis, you have it. But
I've got it. I haven't determined exactly what they responded with, but that would be, now you just made the statement that you have a very high scare tolerance. I will say you looked a little freaked the fuck out when you ran up behind this one. That was just not right, man. I did not like what I felt back there. You looked like you were scared.
Well, that's what the point was, because that, and I, you know, when they say about a cold spell or something, I got a cold spell. I literally saw in that place that we were a pinwheel, and I'm the one that witnessed it. I know what I saw. Stever was behind me. You guys were in front. There was a couple in the place where we were at a cemetery, but there was a kid's grave site, which is sad to see that. And that pinwheel spun as if you were fired it up like a chainsaw. And then as soon as I got closer to it, it completely stopped. And then everybody was saying, oh, was it your flashlight? I know for a fact it wasn't my flashlight or anything. I was just sitting there. And then as soon as I left that, everybody was in front of me, if you remember, Dennis. I walked up. I got the hugest cold spell after I was saying, you know, what is your name? Who is this? And that's where later where you caught that EVP that was on the thing. And I don't know what it was, but it definitely touched the back of my neck. Now, yeah, was it a scare? Because I could say I was a little uneasy. I wasn't totally freaked out. Like, yeah, you know, any spirits or whatever hear me. I think I want to get that total freaked out. I just want to say, yeah, it happened. I believe it. I did it, you know. But it was uneasy. So, I'm not going to say that it wasn't uneasy. I was uneasy.
So was that your first actual true investigation?
Well, that was my first. Well, it's kind of my second, but that was the first true investigation that things actually happened. That we rhymed and played back, and it was like, no shit. You know, and that's the thing. To get to the level where we wanted to, things happen. But Dennis gave us the opportunity to go there, and I told him, hey, if we're there, I'm going to be there, and we were there. And then, you know, we appreciated it so much, Dennis, and I meant to call you that next day. But, of course, you know, I was acting and everything else. Well, our hearts go out to you. We love you as a brother, as always. Adam, it was a great experience for me. It was a great experience for Michael Stever. I can't wait till we do it again that we can, you know, I'll come up and visit and we stay over and really make it a really, let's put it, change your underwear type of night. But we'll see if that happens. I'm sure it will.
By all means, I've got a couple of other locations that we can go play around at. You know, actually,
if
you have
the... I don't know if you drive my car, though, because everything happens when you drive my car.
Hey, we weren't involved in the crash. We simply rolled up on it. We weren't involved in the hit and run. We were simply there to witness it.
Yeah.
So my question, since you want to bitch about my driving, is, but did you die?
No, nobody died. No, I just witnessed stuff that I walked to. I was saying, wow. You know, it was just, wow. I just couldn't believe it. And just give you a real, you paint the scene, Dennis, of what happened, because I'm not from Virginia. I'm from New Jersey, any crap like that. Usually the long arm of the law is on that quicker than anything, but you said all this normally happens. I mean, me and Adam to this day, we talked about it. We said, I can't believe. It's just unfathomable what happened. So I'll just paint the scene. Dennis is driving my car. Of course, there are really no lights when you go around on-ramps or off-ramps in Virginia. I think that's best for serial killers that are out there. But when we came around the corner, we came up to this PT Cruiser that must have spun around, like, I'd say about 4 or 5 times. And the car was somewhat mangled, and so was the guardrail. And there was just a car that was in front of them. And that's where I'm going to take it from then, Dennis. You can tell the rest, because I'm still blown away.
Well, immediately I stopped Paul's car, and I put it on the left shoulder and hit the blinkers. You know, I've got my ghost hunting bag with me. You know, my little speed bag was all I took with me. No, I actually had my big bag with me, too.
You did have your big bag in the back, but you only brought your flashlight, your speed flashlight, whatever.
Yeah, part of my speed bag, I call it, which is just a large camera bag that has a majority of my stuff that I'm going to use at any given moment. It has a couple of really bright flashlights. This one, I think, is 300 lumens, which is pretty damn bright, and it has the strobe mode. So I grab that, and I jump out. Having been ex-EMT, Matt will understand this statement. I ran a bus for many years. So when you see a crash, you are inclined to stop and make sure everybody's okay, et cetera. So I pop out and I jump down through the ditch and, you know, 75 feet or whatever to get over to the car, and this woman yells at me from the car that's parked in front of it. Everybody's out of it. Nobody's hurt. Police are notified. All right, ma'am. That's
then she sped off.
Yeah. Then they bugged the hell out. Now, we're on a pitch black. Well, that is an off-ramp coming off of I-95 onto I-288 that still runs 60, 65 mile an hour coming off this ramp. Excuse me. It's a black vehicle. You know, pretty much all four corners they would have had the shit knocked out of it. So it had like one flasher flashing, and that's on the passenger side of it. Well, the vehicle is sideways on the ramp, taking half the ramp. So if you come off that ramp at high speed, you may slam this thing. So I figured I will stand by. You know, I notified state police, waiting on them to show up. I activate the strobe flashlight on a few cars to get them to slow down. They come through and they miss the debris field and they miss the wrecked car. Then another vehicle comes up that he goes fairly slow trying to figure out what the hell is going on. And here come another vehicle behind him. I put the flashlight straight at him, hit the strobe. Well, then all of a sudden I'm like, he's not going to stop. He's not gonna. And then you hear the tires. Like, oh, son of a bitch. So I call State Patrol again. I'm like, hey, you need to get the damn trooper down here a little faster. I've just had a secondary collision at this accident site. Well, the kid gets out of the car that just rear-ended the other vehicle, and he's like, oh, shit, man, are you all right? Are you all right? And the old man comes out and he's like, what the hell is wrong with you? You didn't see that I was on my brakes and slowing down? Well, I didn't think you were that damn slow. Are you all right? Yeah, I'm fine. Well, the kid goes back to his vehicle. At this point, I've approached both of them. And the kid's like, you're not a cop, are you? Like, no, sir. He goes, good, I'm getting the hell out of here. He picks up the whole plastic front bumper that has been knocked off his car, opens the hatch on his little Honda SUV, chucks it in, and drives off.
Speeds away. As the tractor trailer is coming by, he speeds away.
Yeah, he almost sideswiped the semi that is going nice and slow, squeezes between a semi and the crashed car that started all of this. But meanwhile, I'm behind him with my camera phone out and took a photograph of his license plate, called dispatch again to let him know, hey, send a unit on 288 and find this SOB.
It was just so interesting. And on top of it all, my friend Adam went into that abandoned car, which is a black one, and right in the passenger seat, he said on the floor, was a cell phone, an ID, and a credit card. So I can't even fathom what was going on that night, but it was something that I've never witnessed before, either did he. But it was like, I think it's going to be on like the ID channel or, you know, any of those crime scene investigation stuff, because I just couldn't fathom it.
Now, here's another irony for you. Day before yesterday, I went to one of my usual clients' homes. I did about 3 hours worth of work for him. I'm standing outside of my truck having a smoke break and drinking a bottle of water so I can just rehydrate because it was hot as shit when I was working outside. The neighbor pulls up with, and get this, Paul, you'll recognize this, a green Chrysler 300 with temporary tags on it. You know where I'm going, don't you?
Keep going.
The vehicle that got rear-ended that night, my client's neighbor just purchased that vehicle.
Wow.
Wow. Just, I'm like, wow, man, that car looks just like the one that I watched get hit. Well,
this rear end,
myself. I can't help myself. I walked over and I said, hey, stupid question, but do you know the gentleman that owned this car before you did? He goes, yeah, it's my uncle. I went, son of a bitch. I said, well, did you ever find the individual that rear-ended him a few weeks back? How do you know about that? I said, I was standing on the ramp when it happened, and the kid was in a white little Honda thing, picked up the front bumper cover, threw it in the ass into this vehicle and drove off, and your uncle's standing there with his hands out going, what the hell just happened?
Oh, Jesus.
He's like, I don't know if they ever caught the kid or not.
So nobody ran a Carfax is what you're saying.
Evidently not, right? But let alone that person in the Honda is, of course, not driving, I'm sure, for a little while.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting.
Strange. Oh, it was a hell
strange
of a night. It was from the EVPs on up. So, but
yeah,
overall, it's always an adventure when I'm with you guys.
Whenever it's told.
That's your favorite video, Matt. That was Matt's favorite video.
Which
That's
one?
His favorite. The Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, yeah.
The only part, yeah.
Dennis, if you want to, go ahead.
So, hey, Paul, if you're not busy, July 18th, I told you when you were down here about the Exchange Hotel. Well, they have a public tour and investigation that I'll be one of the guides for. And this is also the location that we're going to try to put on a Paracon that I think we're shooting for the first weekend in October. I'd love for you to be down here for that, and I'm trying to arrange it, you know, to see if we can get you added to the roster there.
That will be awesome. I'll definitely see if I can make it. Like I said, we'll get things scheduled up. I'll talk to you in the meantime and see what goes on, and if I can get down there, I'll be more than happy to do so.
And for July 18th, if you want, you know, grab Michael, grab Adam, come down and check out. I know tonight there are only 5 tickets left, and it's only $25 for the night.
Gotcha. So, gotcha. Of course, they want to have it.
I wonder how Freddie would do for. Not going to bring up the other name, or Siphon, or Joker. I wonder how they would do in an EVP session.
I don't know. I mean, the Joker always loves to be at an EVP session. Depends. Should bring, you know, definitely Freddy coming down a hallway, I think, would freak a lot of people out if you didn't tell them. I think that could really... You could hear people running down the hallway saying, I saw Freddy. I could definitely freak somebody up, I would definitely say. They would.
One cool thing about the Exchange, they have a building there called the Depot Building that sits like right by the railroad tracks. No power to it whatsoever. Absolutely pitch black when you're in there. Now, our buddy Lyle runs Twisted Paranormal Society, and they actually lead the tours and so forth there, helping out the Exchange. He was standing about 5 feet to the left at me. The strange part about this, I got scratched.
Right.
So,
you had an itch, that's all.
Found out. Yeah, well, no, I got scratched by something. I just found out, Lyle actually just posted in the chat, that they're not going to have a Paracon this year. So
gotcha. If
you want to get in there with us, then you need to set up with us for July 18th, bro.
Gotcha.
Come through, do the tour and investigation with us. Twisted Paranormal leads them, like I said, and they do a fantastic job. But it's well worth it, and it sucks, though, that they're not doing a Paracon this year, but apparently it doesn't create a whole lot of money.
Gotcha. Well,
but,
you can only do I gotcha. You can only do so much as far as trying to do it.
Yeah, I'd definitely love to have you hiding somewhere in the Depot Building and
I'm sure they would, too.
But, hey, by the way... Freddie, can you say hi to my buddy Lyle over at Twisted Paranormal Society?
Hey, Lyle. What's up?
Freddy's back.
love it. And not Lyle love it. It's Lyle Lotz, by the way.
Yeah.
I just said.
Look behind you.
Oh, that's fun.
Hey, Dennis, since we still have Dane with us and Paul, before just make it quick so we can get out plugs and everything for everybody before we go into archive. But why don't you give them a little quick thing of what we're going to be trying to do for the two girls that you know.
Oh, all right. Well, I have a young lady that I met when she was probably 15. She's very good friends with my daughter. She's now, I believe, 22, 23. 1 year ago, day before yesterday, her mother passed away. Now, with everything that went on with the, there was a boyfriend and all this bullshit that has occurred, but she passed away from a disease called dermatomyositis. At any rate, these young ladies cannot afford to put a headstone on their mother's grave. So at this time, she's just a plot of grass. Matt and I are going to start up a GoFundMe, a Kickstarter, whatever we can do to see about raising the funds to get these young ladies a headstone for their mother. Now, these aren't just normal young ladies that are going nowhere. One of them used to be the older one, Deanna, used to be a Ohio State wildlife officer. Left that to actually go make more money, and she now works in the state taxation office. She went back to school to get her degrees and everything to do that job. Cassandra, the younger one, who's like 22, that I've known for 6 years or better, had put herself through school to become a beautician, has recently decided that she's not happy with that. She wants to do something that honors her mother. So she is putting herself back through school to go get her LPN and her RN degrees. She's currently working in a dermatologist's office helping with cases similar to her mother's. So these aren't just two young ladies that are doing nothing. Could I get the two of you to help back this and see if we can get a headstone for these young ladies for their mother? Hello?
Yeah, that would... I'm sure. I mean, doing something like that will be awesome. We'll see if we can, I'll see where I can help out anywhere. I mean, we have a lot of people that donate and do a lot. I could check with a lot of my peoples too and see what they can do. A little bit means everything. I mean,
yeah, I have a lot of connections with that too, Dennis.
You know, every bit, a little bit helps. You know?
Yeah, I mean, if I can get, if I can just get some plugs behind it, that would be phenomenal. But as we get everything set up and actually moving forward on it, I just received a message from Cassandra last night telling me a little bit about her mother and what she went through. The two girls were at her bedside when they actually turned off the life support system, and they were both holding her hand while she drew her last breath. You know, it's a very hard thing for a young lady to have to endure. So I'd love to be able to help them out. But, hey, we have 5 minutes. Dane, do me a favor, brother, and throw out your plugs, and then we'll get back into the chat after plugs are out and we hit archive.
Well, I got the three books out, the book on Dr. H.H. Holmes and the Whitechapel Ripper, serial killer, true crime anthology, and also the book that I wrote a couple of years ago now on paranormal research. You can go on Amazon and just type in my name, Dane Ladwig, D-A-N-E-L-A-D-W-I-G, and you can find those, or go on holmesripper.com, and you can find them there. Check me out on Facebook. I'm on Facebook. I got a fan page for Holmes the Ripper, and also got a video on YouTube. So it's actually remarkable. In the first 6 months I had it up, got 412,000 views. So that in itself to me is remarkable, because it had never been done before for a book video, an independent book video. So I'm kind of stoked about that. But some other things coming up in the very near future that I'll let out pretty soon, but not yet. And look forward to getting some more stuff out there.
Awesome. Well, I definitely want to thank
and
you.
And I
for
really appreciate you guys at the end.
Oh, yeah. Not a problem, man. I enjoy the hell out of it. Like I said, don't bug out quite yet. We're going to chat a little more in archive. Paul, go ahead and throw out your plugs while we have live time left.
Well, no problem there. Next place I'll be is at Grindhouse Z with Todd Staruch. He runs his film festival there. If you haven't come out, it's in North Jersey. Check out Todd Staruch, T-O-D-D-S-T-A-R-U-C-H. Also, check out my page. And, of course, it's no longer Freddy versus Jason. Now, of course, it's my acting page, but you can still see all the characters. It's Paul, P-A-U-L, and my last name is spelled G as in George, M as in Mary, I, T-T, that's Tom, E-R. Be sure to friend me. Hey, anything you want to talk about, horror or the lore or even character acting, I'll be more than happy. I don't hold back. I mean, I want to help the industry as much as I can, and keep your fingers crossed, because no chip on my shoulder, but I'm going to make one of my characters as big as I possibly can. So that's it.
See you soon.
Oh, Freddy.
Let's hear you hit that note, Dennis.
Yeah, right. Only if I put my briefs on backwards and squeeze the shit out of them. Well, I guess that didn't quite come out right, did it?
No. No.
Anyway, thank you so much for joining us, gentlemen.
I think we need a little global expansion to make it. Remember, whatever doesn't kill you simply makes you stranger.
And also listening to Full Spectrum Radio will make you stranger. But, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for joining us again for another fantastic episode of Full Spectrum Radio. Our guests tonight were Dane Ladwig, fantastic author, great friend, wonderful researcher on serial killers and so forth. We had Paul Gemitter with us, who does some fantastic voices. Acting, does the roles very well. It's been awesome talking with them. If you want to listen in to what else we get into, you need to call in now at 323-580-5703. You can listen in on the board or catch the archive. I am CPR Dennis.
I'm CPR Matt.
You can find both of us at Facebook and Twitter under those names. You can also find us at Chicagoland Paranormal Researchers on Facebook. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Have a great week. And
see you soon.
And archive. Yeah, I definitely
love it.
Want to thank you for joining us, gentlemen. It's been fun. Dane, I definitely want to talk to you some more regarding
Braley Brothers. I'm going to see if I can somehow or another find my way to get the opportunity to speak with Anthony, which is the youngest Braley brother. He is still sitting in prison at this time.
Right.
My understanding is Meekins, who is the fourth, and he was only their neighbor. I believe he is out and loose, Duncan Meekins.
Right.
I believe he killed two of the victims. I'm not sure if he has been paroled or not. I don't know if he's been released. I know he was up for parole a few times and it was denied. So we'll find out, but I think it would be fantastic if I could get the opportunity to speak with one of these gentlemen, maybe in time to do the next episode of Full Spectrum Radio that we talk about the serial killers and so forth.
Right, right.
Hey,
and
Dane, I think that this would be kind of intriguing for you. Paul, when you were actually doing the research and the background and all the stuff to create the Freddy character,
yeah,
did you look into anything that has to do with, like, actual serial killers that make a character,
you know,
better, or no?
Well, it depends. I mean, Freddy, if you look at Freddy as a character overall, he's basically in the dreams. I mean, yeah, he's supposed to be a son of a thousand maniacs. I mean, the lore with Freddy, I always take it from the Robert Englund point of view. Yes, it's the gadgets, of course, and the that he used, I mean, the carving knives and so forth. Could you stem it over to serial killing? Yeah, you could. I mean, the debonair, you know, I remember Dane was talking about somebody being really charismatic. I mean, stop me if I'm wrong, Dane, that's exactly how Ted Bundy was. I mean, Ted Bundy lured all of his victims in by being as charismatic as debonair, and then right when he had them, when nobody was around, that's when he struck. I mean, you know, only people know as many as Ted Bundy killed, but I'm sure there's a lot more. I mean, we only know even as far as many as the BT killer did. The only person who really knows how many killed is those people themselves. I mean, truthfully. I mean,
it goes for any killer,
you know,
right.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so many. You know, there's lore saying that some people say, and Dean, I don't know how your feelings, that the Zodiac killer is still around. I mean, who's to say that the Zodiac killer couldn't have killed, stopped, is going to wait, keep it on the low, and then start back again. You know, and nobody ever knew. Nobody ever knew that Gacy was going to be a fun-friended clown and then fucking up little kids, but that's what he did.
Right.
That's what he did.
Yeah, and in talking to serial killers that I've talked to and interviewed, you know, to get their perspective on things, and I have talked to Robert Englund, and his perspective pretty much is he was coming from a fear factor point of view, and that's what he was trying to get across. He really wasn't going from any type of serial killer or anything like that. He just wanted to encapsulate fear, you know, because that was his role.
Coming
out
of the dark,
he pulled it off. Right,
you're right.
Right. So, and you know, you can't really say that he tried to, you know, his character was trying to pull together like any serial killer or anything, you know?
Right, you take somebody like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, not to cut you off, but take somebody like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, they said that derived from Ed Gein and things like that. Freddy was Freddy. Like I said, whatever goes in the dreams goes in the dreams. That creep factor was what I wanted to personify, and based on, I mean, Matt, and I don't know, Dane, if you ever seen me in action, but Matt can attest to this, and so can Dennis. I definitely have the creep factor down, especially when I'm in character.
Right, right.
Yeah, he's definitely a creep.
You know, I don't know.
I scare because I care. That's the reason why.
No, I don't know if Matt mentioned, but I'm doing some things right now with film, and you know, you can't always portray the serial killer as this creep, as this scary guy. You know,
he's not.
Cyclops, because he's a very charismatic, very personable, very loving, very caring. He wins over your trust.
And that's how he blends in so well, and that's how come he strikes and kills.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And he's the last person anybody would ever suspect.
He could be that Santa Claus that sticks your little kid on the lap. That's it, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right about that. He's anybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's, that. Well, like Paul, when I say that message during the show, it has to do with that and something else, which is the upcoming Ghost Conference in November.
Right.
So we still have some spots up at Dane. I know you know Ursula and Willie Atkins.
Yeah.
Which Ursula Bielski, who is a dear friend of mine, is amazing as far as, you know, paranormal research and the stuff that she's done. Willie Atkins is a horror filmmaker from a little bit west of where I'm at in the suburbs of Chicago. So it's a horror film festival and a paranormal as well. So tying the two together instead of having them independent. So yeah, it's going to be horror, it's going to be paranormal, it's going to be like a just a, an all-out party. So that's why I set out. Yeah, that's why it's at, what the hell's the name of that? It's actually at a school that was established in 1903, if I remember right, in Chicago.
Oh, it's in Chicago. Well, I've never been to Chicago, so maybe we'll talk about doing it. That would be pretty cool. Hey, Dave, you know what you were talking about. You know, every day they would never have caught the, from what I know, the BTK killer, because after he did his stint, he moved to another town. He became a pastor again, and the only reason why he got caught is because he happened to send a parishioner's letter or whatever, and he was using the same fucking typewriter that he did when he was sending all the letters into the cops.
Well, look
at
Dennis Rader.
They would never have caught him. He would have killed again.
Yeah.
Would have killed again.
Dennis Rader, I mean, yeah, right? How about it? There's a lot of them that would have killed again. It, you know, I mean, had they not made one simple mistake.
That's what it was, one stupidity mistake. But then there's some that tells you that they're not making mistakes. I mean, people are dying every day.
Yeah,
you don't know.
Holmes. Right, Holmes would have went on killing for who knows how long had he not tried to use his closest business partner in a scam.
Right.
And kill them. If it were not for that one little piece of information, that one little incident, he could have gone on for tens of years. The guy was only 34 years old when they hung him.
Oh, well, he would have been like 60,
you know,
killed thousands.
Yeah, thousands. Tens of thousands. You know, It's unbelievable. You know, stupid mistakes. Andre Chekhtil, you know, he got caught off of a stupid mistake. You know, and this is a guy who was, you want to talk about brutal, I mean, his victims were alive. And he was cutting pieces off of them and feeding them, to his victims. And then turning around and eating them after they expired.
Yeah, well,
you know,
he would starve them. He would starve them for 14 to 21 days to the point of just complete emaciation. And then just say, here, dude, you hungry? All right, well, it's going to be you.
Right. It's to lay a piece of their body off of them and make them eat that.
Yeah.
Then after they died from the pain and everything else, then he went ahead and ate them. But he made one simple, stupid mistake. You know, and as a result of that, he said a stupid, something stupid to a tabloid reporter in the square in Moscow. And that tabloid reporter thought it odd. He took it to the cops. The cops just went to question him.
Well, sometimes all it takes.
All it takes.
I have a feeling that Blog Talk is starting to screw up on us, gentlemen.
I'm still here, man.
All right, yeah, and just all of a sudden we got a horrendous echo going.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it warrants a lot more discussion.
All right, Sling Blade. Talk about you, Dennis.
Well, don't you be talking about me.
French fried taters.
Biscuits and mustard.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to get Harlequin to help us.
You just remember, Matt. You talk shit about
it me. It puts the lotion on the skin or else it gets the hose again. There we go.
I like that hose, don't you, Matt?
I do.
He likes the lotion.
Yeah, he likes the lotion. Right? They don't call you Captain Lube for nothing, my friend.
Well, at least the lotion makes it less painful when the hose hits you.
That's right.
I'm glad you went that route because I was worried there.
Dane, you got to watch him. You know, Matt could be a serial killer for all we know.
Oh, yeah, I know. I know.
Hey, Paul, apparently you weren't informed that Matt got a promotion. He is now Lieutenant Lotion.
Oh, that's good. He's selling lotion out of the back of his 1970s van with the couch in it. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, well, lotion and candles.
How the fuck did this kid turn into me?
Oh, no. I think it was all that episode of Parafest when you were a little out of it.
A little out of it? Holy shit, you know.
I was kind of a lot out of it, and you can blame Dave Tango and Steve Gonzalez and Grant Wilson for that. I have to go find Dennis. No, do another shot. No, I have to go find Dennis. Do another shot. I have to go find Dennis. Do another shot.
I have to have
Dennis come find me.
But I do have to say this. When in Rome,
do as Matt
that is
does.
All. Exactly.
No, when in Rome, stay away from the emotion.
Break out the Uzo, and when you're in Rome, break out the Uzo.
Oh, my God. That was an absolutely hilarious night. I had a blast. But... All right, well, gentlemen, I want to thank you very much for your time.
Anytime. Hey, listen, send me that information about the headset. I'll do what I can, you know, as far as if anybody, and if a Kickstart does start, just let me know, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, and like I said, even if it's just helping promote the page and seeing if we can, you know, get more backers behind it, I know you two have got fantastic connections, fantastic friends.
Just let me know, and I'll share it. Share the wealth.
We're not asking for money from you guys. I hope you didn't get that impression at all. But if there's something that can be done,
and Matt, I wouldn't give you money because you're not that good, bud.
I know.
He's really good with the lotion.
Yeah, that's all.
I am
lotion man.
You know what I.
Yourself, Matt.
I got lotion hoses. Don't fuck with me.
Dean, stay away. Stay far away, my friend.
Right. Yeah.
Stay far away.
Hey, Matt. Matt,
we'll be
do me a favor. Give me a call tomorrow.
Say that again, Dane, who were you talking to, brother?
Matt.
Yes.
Matt. Do me a favor.
Yes,
give me a call tomorrow.
I will do that.
About that other thing. Okay.
Preference on time?
No, no preference.
All right. I will give you a call tomorrow, then.
It was a pleasure. Guys, I'm going to head out then, and you need me, you call me.
Sounds great, Paul. We appreciate you coming on.
Anytime, man.
Take care, brother. We'll catch up.
All right. Later.
Paul, it was
thanks,
nice to make your acquaintance on the phone.
Thanks. So you too, sir. We'll talk to each other soon, I'm sure.
Sounds good. And Dennis, we'll be talking to you real soon, too.
Bye-bye. Sounds good.
Good night, Paul. Good night, Dane.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you both for joining us tonight. It's been fantastic. We'll definitely have to talk off air, Dane. And we'll see where we can get with, who knows, maybe we can do something with the Briley brothers.
Sounds good.
All right, brother, you take care.
All right, good night.
Have a great week. Hey, man, good night.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Oh, man, what an awesome episode.
I know, right?
Great guy giving us a fantastic conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for joining us also. If you're still listening into the archives, good Lord, damn Coke tried to kill me. Coca-Cola, let me get that right. I better straighten that out. I better get that one, nip that one in the bud right away. But yeah.
Oh, I've had too much Coke. No, you're not wired enough.
No, not quite that wired. It's been a fantastic episode. Ladies and gentlemen, make sure to go back and look up our guest tonight. It's Paul Gmitter, G-M-I-T-T-E-R, and Dane Ladwig. You can find them both on Facebook. Awesome to talk to. Fantastic conversations with both of them. And Matt, as always, I want to thank you for letting me ride coattails on the episode again.
Well, that was going to rhyme. So no, let me rephrase. Well, sir, normally I'm the one sitting back in the cut, but I actually had a decent amount to contribute to this conversation. So, you are definitely welcome. And I have to say thank you for setting up our guest for the evening. Because that was all you. So,
no shot. You meant to be blush.
Well, hey, I got to give credit where credit is due. And when it comes to you, it's not that often. No, I'm kidding.
Well, no, you're right.
No, I'm not, actually. I give you a lot of, like, hats off to you for so much that you've done, one, with the show, two, just been there as a personal brother for me. I can't say that I love you enough because I'm flabbergasted that we met at the fucking Diamond in Richmond and it's gotten to this point now.
And kind of just a fluke that we met. So I think what they say, you know, people don't just randomly come into your life. They come into it for a reason that's meant to be. I believe that's actually true. Some of them for experience, some of them for education. I don't know what the purpose was for the two of us getting tied together, but it's been a pretty cool ride so far, brother. So let's see where it takes us.
But
I'm head into it. No questions asked. So
it's been pretty damn fun. But ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to draw this awesome episode to a stop at this point. And just because we've had so damn much fun with everything, let's see if I can send this out of here with a little decent song. Thanks for joining us again. I'm CPR Dennis.
I'm CPR Matt.
Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Make sure to follow us. Check out Chicagoland Paranormal Researchers on Facebook. The page is usually pretty cool. We try to keep it updated. We try to post interesting shit just out of random. So you never know what's going to pop up. Also, make sure to tune in next week with us for another episode of Full Spectrum Radio. We don't know who we'll have yet, but I guarantee you it'll be a pretty good show. So, here we go.
Summer has come and passed. The innocent can never last. Wake me up when September ends.